What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on Squawk Pod, a damning investigation into Instagram and its role in connecting pedophiles. Facebook's former chief security officer and one of the investigators at Stanford, Alex Stamos.
While there are a bunch of companies involved, Instagram turns out to be probably the most key one because it is the place where these buyers and sellers find each other.
The state and safety of social media for teens.
We found that Snap and TikTok were doing a lot better. Those are the two other big platforms for teenagers.
That important conversation today. And the Saudis spreading soft power through sports. New York Times columnist Tom Friedman on the kingdom and global golf.
I think this decision was a terrible decision, and everything that's flowed from it has been to unravel and try to disentangle that terrible, terrible, foolish decision, in my view.
Those stories, the big tech workforce, crypto's lawsuits, all on this weird, smoky sky day in New York.
Did you see the orange sky yesterday?
Oh, my God. It was
like
the middle of the day.
It was apocalyptic, sort of.
It was unbelievable.
It is Thursday, June 8th, 2023. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. We are live from the Nasdaq market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
Meantime, New York City's air pollution, it now ranks the worst of any city in the world as of yesterday. As wildfire smoke from Canada continued to drift over the area, the city's air quality rating reaching a level considered hazardous for all residents. The FAA halted some flights bound for LaGuardia Airport due to the smoke, poor visibility causing delays at Newark Liberty Airport. New York's Governor Kathy Hochul calling the air quality an emergency crisis and urging people to stay indoors if possible. Some folks are being sent home. Google told its East Coast employees to work from home if possible and limit exposure to outdoor air. Major League Baseball postponing games in New York and Philadelphia. And the Twitter account for the musical Hamilton said the hazardous air quality made it impossible for a number of its artists to perform last night. A whole bunch of shows were shutting down, including Shakespeare in the Park, which was, I think they were doing a rehearsal, so they needed to prepare yesterday.
Did you see the orange sky yesterday?
Oh, my God. It was in the middle of the day.
It was apocalyptic, sort of.
It was unbelievable.
And it didn't, it's weird, it didn't get warm.
No.
It was supposed to be 75 degrees yesterday. It was like 66.
None of the sun rays.
But this is post-apocalyptic. I mean, think about it. If this is where we're all headed, and this is going to happen, you know, even a couple times a year, this is a problem. It's a big
just
problem.
What do you mean? From drought? You have to do forest management, obviously, up there. You need to do pre-burns. You need to manage the forest because, Andrew, emissions are going to keep rising because of China and India. So if you think it's going to happen all the time, the flooding too, the flooding and the droughts, it's just one in one place, one in the other from this?
I think that it is impossible to not put this in the category of some form of meaningful climate change that's happening in this world. And the fact is that these forests should be managed. Forests should be managed better, but
that's the only way to do it, though. But
the truth is, they're so dry now, and that's what leads to
this. It's different every year. It has to do with El Nino. It has to do with normal weather patterns. I'm always told don't conflate weather with climate, and that's what happens all the time when it's in the favor of people. The bottom line, Andrew, is emissions are going to continue rising for the next decade. Because of China and India. When forest fires burn, when they burn, the emissions that come from this dwarf any mitigation efforts that we're doing right now. In California, for 15 years of CO2 mitigation was wiped out in 1 year in 2020 from the forest fire. So if you don't manage the forest properly.
I'm not saying you shouldn't manage the forest properly.
That's the only thing we can do, because the other stuff is we can't change that. We cannot change that.
But at some okay, let's not have a climate change.
You started it.
No, because you tried to say that this has nothing to do with climate change.
I don't think it does have anything. We've had forest fires for 4 billion years on this planet. There's been forest fires. It's lightning. We have droughts. We have floods. We have adverse weather events. Just to knee-jerk tie one to the other is just sort of jejune. It's just not, it's banal. It's just not. Don't do it. You can't, every time, every flood, every drought, every heat wave, every cold wave, every, if it causes everything, you can't refute the hypothesis. Did you read anything today?
I'm not going to say anything about anything. Why don't you continue?
You want me to read the news?
No, you can do. Okay. You can talk about whatever you like.
Google's planning to crack down on employees who haven't been coming into the office consistently. The company updated its hybrid work policy yesterday. Internal memos viewed by CNBC show the updates include tracking office badge attendance, confronting workers who aren't coming in when they're supposed to, and adding attendance as a component in performance reviews. Yeah, most employees have been expected to report to physical offices at least 3 days per week since April of last year. And in a memo from Google's HR chief, the company stressed that the benefits of working together in office are apparent and asked those people already approved for remote work to reconsider. A separate internal document showed that already approved remote workers may be subject to reevaluation if the company determines it's necessary. And, wow, they're writing it for me now. And going forward, new fully remote work will be granted by exception only.
Absolutely.
It'd be impossible to do it going backwards because the time has already passed. So that's kind of implied that from here on, that's the way it'll be.
Days after the SEC filed suit against Binance lawyers for the crypto exchange, accusing Chairman Gary Gensler now of previously offering to serve as an outside advisor to the company. The lawyers claim in documents filed by the SEC that Gensler offered to serve in the role during several conversations in March of 2019 that he had with the company's founder, we call him CZ, and other executives. They say CZ continued to stay in touch with Gensler after that meeting and sat down for an interview with Gensler at his request as part of a crypto course he was teaching at MIT. So
this was interesting. I tried to figure this out.
Thickens a little bit.
Tried to figure this out yesterday. I guess the original invitation for lunch came from CZ.
Right.
But having him come to speak to his students at MIT came from Gensler. Gensler, I think, pushed back and said, there is nothing needed here. He does not need to recuse himself. And that's what CZ's lawyers were kind of pushing for.
A mystery trader may have netted millions on an unusual Coinbase options bet just minutes before the SEC announced it was suing rival Binance. At 10:36 a.m. Monday, a block of more than 4,000 contracts of Coinbase puts with a strike price of $50 that were expiring Friday hit the tape as the stock was trading at just over $61 a share. By noon in New York, Coinbase had fallen nearly 12% in the options, which were bought. You can imagine if it was 61 expiring on Friday with a 50 strike price, they were 18 cents each. They traded for as high as a dollar, a gain of almost 460% if sold at the peak. They're still out of the money, but they actually, as you can see,
they sold at the peak though.
It actually got into the money and would have been worth a couple of dollars there.
Yeah.
But now it's back out of the money, 52.78. So
raises questions if somebody knew something was
exactly
coming, and then even more questions if they sold at the peak, but at the trough.
You could sell Coinbase based on knowing something about Binance, I guess. But then it happened to Coinbase. I'd be better wait a couple of
Amazon planning to launch an ad-supported tier of its Prime Video streaming service. That's according to the Wall Street Journal, saying the discussions are in an early stage. Separately, Amazon is also in talks with Warner Brothers Discovery and Paramount Global about adding the ad-based tiers of their streaming services through Prime Video channels. That means users can sign up for and view Max and Paramount Plus through Amazon's app. And it's fascinating to watch what Amazon Prime has actually done if you look at how sort of successful the service has been at becoming almost an aggregator in a way that so many other services haven't yet. But that could be sort of where this all goes. I know we talk about all of the sort of premium programming that, you know, an Apple and an Amazon and everybody's trying to do. But in many ways, if they can become the new cable box or the new cable consolidator, that is actually sort of a pretty great business.
It's just weird, though, because, you know, like an ad tier, I feel like I don't know people who pay for for Amazon Video as much as they do it just to get the, there's so many other things that come with Amazon Prime, like for the delivery and everything else. It feels like they would be the last ones who would need an ad tier to draw people in, because there's so much you get with that membership anyway.
You're able to get it at a cheaper price.
But the rest of the stuff too? You get like delivery and all the things. Like, I didn't buy Amazon Prime for the
Some people are buying Amazon Video because they want the video service separately.
Just a separate thing without.
If you want the video, cheaper. In the same way that people subscribe to Apple or they subscribe to Paramount, or that people, you have a TV show that you like.
Yeah, it just that one I never think of as being a subscription to just the video, as opposed to all the rest of them, because there's so much other stuff you get with it.
But they have football, and they have a lot of other things that are maybe, for whatever reason, you're not.
I get it. No, I get it. But I get it because I want my packages delivered.
Like, fair enough.
Yeah, there's stuff that goes along with it. I just think of that as having so many other functions that come with it.
Coming up, a disturbing investigation into Instagram from the Wall Street Journal and Stanford University. A network of pedophiles connected by an algorithm, keeping kids safe on social, with Facebook's former chief security officer, Alex Stamos.
These are teenagers who are putatively selling their own imagery and videos effectively as a commercial business that they have set up on a variety of platforms. And while there are a bunch of companies involved, Instagram turns out to be probably the most key one.
Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
This is Squawk Pod from CNBC with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. And a warning, this next story is a sensitive one. It covers pedophilia and explicit child imagery. Here's Andrew.
New research shining a light on the dark underside of social media. Investigation by the Wall Street Journal and a university researcher saying that Meta Platforms-owned Instagram is connecting and promoting a network of accounts dedicated to underage sex content. The journal says Instagram's technology connects pedophiles and its algorithm recommends the illicit content. In a statement, Meta says that it continually explores ways to combat violations of its child safety policies and is committed to continuing that work. Joining us right now, though, to talk about it is Alex Stamos. He's the head of the Stanford University Internet Observatory and Facebook's former chief security officer. So he knows about these issues well, and I believe you understand how this algorithm works. Tell us about both the challenge and really what's happening here.
Yeah, so this is a research report by myself and two of my colleagues, David Thiel and Renee DiResta at the Internet Observatory. And what we found working alongside the Wall Street Journal is that there's a huge network of what we call self-generated CSAM. So this is self-generated child sexual abuse material. These are teenagers who are putatively selling their own imagery and videos effectively as a commercial business that they have set up on a variety of platforms. And while there are a bunch of companies involved, Instagram turns out to be probably the most key one because it is the place where these buyers and sellers find each other. The buyers use hashtags that are not that hard to guess. I'm not going to say any on air, tags that they use to find a couple of initial buyers. And then what happens is that there's hundreds and hundreds of accounts of sellers who are connected to one another, who then the algorithm that Instagram has shows them and it introduces them to more potential sellers of this material. So it is a real problem, and it is something that we have told Instagram about several weeks ago that they've started to address, but it really is a huge issue there.
How long has it been going on?
Well, this has probably been going on for at least a year, year and a half for this specific network. That's about the age of most of these accounts. Few of them are more than a year old. It's hard to know exactly how long that this kind of exact thing has happened on Instagram. But these specific accounts are, some of them are about a year old. What happens is if sometimes they get caught, if Instagram looks, takes one down, they reinsert themselves in the network. And so that's one of the interesting things we found is that this is effectively a coalition of sellers of child abuse material who then if somebody gets kicked off and they come back, they will welcome them back into the fold. They will follow them. They will promote them. And then the algorithm and the way the hashtags and search work on Instagram reintroduce that seller to thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of willing buyers.
Axel, let me ask you a very pointed question, given that you used to work at this company and given that you've raised questions at times about Meta and their security and their management, either about looking the other way at certain things and other things. In this case, are you suggesting that they knew about this and looked the other way? Are you suggesting they've been acting in good faith, trying to eradicate this, and it's a problem that's almost insurmountable insofar as these folks popping up left and right on their own? Judge this for us.
So it's definitely not an insurmountable problem. Getting rid of everybody doing anything bad on Instagram, that's impossible. Not allowing people to openly sell child abuse material, some of which is not just naked photos and such, but some really, really horrible, terrible content. It is totally possible. And I think what's happened here is that Meta has really focused on AI and automation as the backbone of their content moderation strategy, of what we call trust and safety in the industry. They've really focused on how can we have computers do this work for us in all these languages at all of this scale across the world. And they've de-emphasized having people just go and do the gumshoe work of looking for these kinds of networks and taking them down. And I think it should be an indication that if three academics with limited data access, with the tools that we can build on the outside of the company, if we were able to do this work on an annual budget that is less than Meta pays for Post-it notes, probably, then their reinvestment in having human beings do that kind of work is probably the only appropriate way forward. And that's something we've talked about them. The other thing that turns out is because of the work that we've reported them, they found that there was a serious technical flaw that was closing reports. If somebody had reported that one of these accounts was selling child abuse materials, that those reports would not get seen by a human, would be closed automatically by a computer without any action being taken. So there are specific technical problems that they're working on, but really in the end, they just need to invest in people to do this work on a continuous basis.
Alex, when you say this is a huge problem, what are we talking about? How many teenagers, how many people are doing this? How many customers are paying them? It's just a terrifying thing.
So the cluster we were looking at had about 500 sellers and tens of thousands of buyers. It's not super easy to tell exactly how many buyers there are across this whole network, but it is in the tens of thousands. And a lot of these people are using their real identities. So you're not talking about criminal masterminds here, at least on the buyer side. These are people who have accounts that are then tied to their real Facebook accounts and their little league coaches and pastors and such.
I mean, can't law enforcement actually start zapping those people and making examples of these people who are child pornography? I mean, these are pedophiles.
They are. And I hope that was what happens. And this also is a failing of law enforcement, to be frank. Again, not criminal masterminds here. We're just able to go look, use terminology that is widely used within this community, insert ourselves. And then Instagram does a lot of the other work of recommending other people to follow to us. And so one of the things we did here is we reported all of this to the National Center of Missing and Exploited Children, which is the legal clearinghouse in the United States chartered by Congress to handle these kinds of reports. We reported it to them in the same way the tech companies make these reports, and they have been working with the FBI. So we are hoping to see arrests in the coming months.
Hey, Alex, you know, when you put out this report with the Journal, I think Elon Musk and others on Twitter, you know, promoted it because they were looking at a competitor. When you look at the competition and the safety on platforms like a Twitter, like a Snap, we can go down the list. How do you measure them, given the people you know and what you know about the security and other protocols that people have put in place? Where does Meta stack in that for you?
Right. It was a little odd for Mr. Musk to I appreciate that he went out there and pushed the report. I guess he didn't read it, because one of the things we found is that there were several hundred accounts on Twitter, although it did look like they were being taken down. The interesting thing we found about Twitter is that sometimes since Mr. Musk purchased the company, their basic scanning for what's called known CSAM. So these are images of kids that have been seen, usually reported to NCMEC, reported to law enforcement. And then NCMEC generates what's called a hash, a fingerprint for the image, right, that is then shared with tech companies. Twitter scanning for that stuff had actually broken and they had not noticed themselves. We noticed it because our systems automatically check anything that's being downloaded to our systems at Stanford to make sure it's not on that list. And we reported right. that all to NCMEC. We took that to Twitter and they found that they had technical problems and they fixed it. So Twitter has their own issues here. We found that Snap and TikTok were doing a lot better. Those are the two right. other big platforms for teenagers. And crazy enough, for all the issues we talk right. about with TikTok, this is not one of them. This was a right. network that was any time that these folks popped up on TikTok, they would be taken down pretty quickly.
We appreciate you bringing us the story, the work you've been doing on this important stuff, and appreciate it and look forward to talking again very, very soon.
Thanks. Thank you.
Cheese will be next.
Coming up next on Squawk Pod, the new Middle East. New York Times foreign affairs columnist Tom Friedman on the changes in the region and the impact around the globe.
I can tell you that if you haven't been to Israel in the last 6 months, you haven't been to Israel. And if you haven't been to Saudi Arabia in the last 5 years, you really haven't been to Saudi Arabia.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
You're listening to Squawk Pod.
Stand Andrew by in 3, 2, 1, cue Andrew.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We're live at the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. Manager Ross Sorkin along with Joe Kernan and Becky Quick.
New York Times foreign affairs columnist Tom Friedman joins us this morning. His latest column, From Tel Aviv to Riyadh, recounts a recent reporting trip he made to the Middle East. And Tom, welcome.
Great to be with you, Beck.
Middle East is a place that you spent a lot of time, but you say on this most recent trip, things were very different.
Yeah, you know, as someone who's reported from both Israel and Saudi Arabia for really since the late 1980s, I can tell you that if you haven't been to Israel in the last 6 months, you haven't been to Israel to see the remarkable democracy movement that's emerged there from the center left and center right. And if you haven't been to Saudi Arabia in the last 5 years, you really haven't been to Saudi Arabia. And let me start there, Becky. You know, when I left Saudi Arabia the last time, late 2017, Mohammed bin Salman, the effective ruler, had announced women would be able to drive beginning in 2018. I came back and discovered Saudi Arabia has its first woman astronaut who drove a rocket up to the space station. And has women Uber drivers now, and has two Formula One women drivers. So a huge vault forward. When I left in 2017, MBS said Saudi women can attend soccer games. There's now a Saudi women's premier soccer league that's just about to begin its second season. So it's been a dramatic, a radical, and rapid social change. When I left in 2017, women's participation in the workforce in Saudi Arabia was around 16, 17%. It's now around 33%, which is a gigantic increase in such a short time. These are important trends. They're good trends.
Important trends, good trends, but it goes with the same leader, Mohammed bin Salman, who's also been linked directly to the killing of Jamal Khashoggi. And all of these questions that are coming up in the news front and center because of LIV Golf and the combination with the PGA, people look at it and they say it's blood money because it's coming from the PIF, the Saudi Arabian PIF.
You know, it all goes back to that terrible, grotesque, not just murder, but dismemberment of Jamal Khashoggi. And so, you know, for me, Becky, when it comes to how do you think about Saudi Arabia today, how do you write about it? From my point of view as a foreign affairs writer, is to ignore what was done to Khashoggi and the continual suppression of dissent, political dissent in Saudi Arabia would be immoral in my point of view. To ignore, though, the dramatic social changes that are happening there that are enormously important for Saudi Arabia, for the Middle East, and for American interests would be irresponsible. And so the only way I can square those two is to write about both as honestly and as forthrightly as I can. Now, where that bleeds into the Live tour, that sort of structural dilemma, Beck, is right at the heart of everything. We talked about Live when it emerged. I thought it was a terrible, terrible idea. Saudi Arabia wanted to get into golf, into sports in different ways. But instead of getting into golf by building golf courses in Saudi Arabia, or maybe starting small with a women's golf academy that is in line with the social trends it's trying to promote, its sovereign wealth fund decided to basically launch an attack on the PGA Tour by partnering with some of the most dodgy members of the PGA Tour, I would say, and creating a rival golf league. It's like saying we want to get into baseball, and we're going to start a rival to the American League and the National League, and we're going to try to skim off the best players for huge bags of money. I thought it was just a terrible, terrible decision. But that was the decision they took. It was bad for golf, and it was bad for Saudi Arabia, Becky, because it took attention away from the social changes, important, vital, and real changes happening there, focused on...
Do they win, though, with now partnering with the PGA officially?
You know, Becky, I have to tell you, I've been busy writing this column, and I've read as many stories as I can, I think, about this deal. I don't quite understand it yet, and so I'm really reluctant to comment on it one way or another. But to me, you know, because I just don't understand exactly how it's all going to work.
I have trouble figuring out how we approach the world in 2023, Tom. I do. I don't know how to rank China's human rights record with Saudi Arabia's, with Iran's, with North Korea. I don't know how to say some of our multinationals in China are tech companies that go there. It just seems like you have to have some type of compartmentalization of all these things. I don't know if Live is worse than Apple and Google and everybody else. I don't know how to rank it. I don't know how we operate in this world under the realities without being hypocritical in one place versus the other. It's impossible.
Joe, you're exactly right. My criticism of Live is I think it's just a bad idea for Saudi Arabia and a bad idea, obviously, for golf, because it took attention away by the way it was done, Joe, from really positive things that are happening there. But on the broader question that you raise, you know, Joe, Deng Xiaoping, had Deng Xiaoping passed away in China's great reformer in 1990, his obit in the New York Times would have said the butcher of Beijing. He approved the killings in Tiananmen Square, the crackdown there. It turns out he lived 20 years later and is seen as one of the greatest economic reformers of the 20th and 21st century. So obviously, you know, these things are always going to go together. From a point of view of a journalist, I think you just have to talk about both, and you have to highlight the bad, acknowledge the good, and encourage the good, because life is messy and life is complicated. And that's what I tried to do.
How much do you think, though, about the value of we're talking about the PGA, but sports broadly, because there's part of me that thinks that the gloves are now off. All sports leagues could come up for grabs. And what's to say that Saudi doesn't say, you know what, we want to start a basketball league. We're going to start a three-on-three basketball league. We're going to call up LeBron James, Steph Curry when their contracts are up. We're going to buy off, you know, the top 20 players at the NBA. And 2 years later, we're going to call up Adam Silver and say, hey, Adam, you know, we have this competing league over here. Actually, we'd like to merge with your league. And he might say to himself, well, I'm now in a position where I might actually have to do this with you. And how important is the NBA whatever you think the soft power for America is through sport, the NBA, Major League Baseball, the NFL, harder probably to do with the NFL, given this just the size and scale of those teams. But a tennis, by the way, being an easy sports industry, if you will, to to pick off. And how concerned should we be, not be? I don't know. Maybe this is all up for grabs and it's all good.
Well, obviously, you have to be wise and not just rich. And to me, Andrew, you got to go back to the original story here. I mean, just do this in 30 seconds. In 1979, the Grand Mosque in Mecca was taken over by radicals. Those radicals attacked the Saudi ruling family as insufficiently pious and many other things. It took them 30 days to get them out of the Grand Mosque. We're talking about taking over the Vatican of the Muslim world. That move was a shock to Saudi Arabia and to the ruling family. What was their response? Was basically to turn over massive amounts of religious authority and social norms to the religious establishment there to protect themselves. And because they had a lot of wealth, they took the entire Arab Muslim world on a giant right turn, okay? Now, where MBS came in was that his goal when he came in, let's before anything happened with Khashoggi, was to reverse 1979. What started in 1979 ended in 9/11. So that's why I thought he was an extremely important figure and still do. He was reversing a giant trend in the Middle East that was not in our interest, not in the world's interest. Then in 2018, because he's an autocrat, he kills his government, kills Khashoggi, okay? A terrible, terrible thing. At the same time, though, he keeps these reforms going. So anyone writing about this country is in a real dilemma. Now, from a Saudi point of view, if you're in that dilemma, if you're putting your partners in the world in that dilemma of having to put Khashoggi over here and the critically important social reforms over here and try to encourage them to keep going, the last thing you should be doing is trying to force a takeover, a breakup of any sports league, whether it's Premier Soccer in the UK or it's golf or the NBA. It only draws attention away from the hugely important social reforms you're doing and take someone like the Khashoggi murder, something like that murder, from the sports page to the front page. It was just a really bad decision. It's not how you get into sports. If you want to get into sports, do it in a way that is aligned with the social trends that you've ignited at home. They are hugely important for you and hugely important in the world. I think this decision was a terrible decision, and everything that's flowed from it has been to unravel and try to disentangle that terrible, terrible, foolish decision, in my view.
Tom, we're out of time, but we didn't even get to things like oil and the critical relationship between the United States and Saudi Arabia, the changes we've seen there. Maybe you come back soon and tell us a little bit more about that.
Thanks, Beth.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. Tom Friedman.
And that's the pod for today. We do a lot of stories on Squawk Box, some fun, some buzzy, but many are important. And we try to bring you all you need to know every day. So thanks for listening to us through all of it. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern and follow Squawk Pod. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.